Welcome. This is the Treatment-Free Beekeeping Podcast. Today on the podcast, I have Ariel Gilbert and Christine Kurtz, and they are some beekeepers that I've gotten to know from down at the Sonoma County group in Sonoma, and they have a very interesting topic to talk to you today about that I learned a bunch of stuff that I'm totally definitely going to be using in the future in how I manage my bees. It's a perspective that most of us haven't been exposed to before. It's the perspective of a blind beekeeper. And I learned some amazing ways of perceiving a beehive that I hadn't thought of before. And so I want to share them with you. I'm excited to get to this episode so that you can hear it. I'll stop talking now. Here's the theme song. Ariel and Christine, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, hello.
Thanks for inviting us.
So let's start with Ariel first. Why don't you kind of give us your background story and tell us how you got into beekeeping?
I'd be happy to. I originally got into beekeeping as a teenager. And at that point in my life, I was sighted and I was in high school at the time and ordered my first package of bees from Sears and Roebuck and a hive, put the hive together and did, you know, read books and got involved that way and had been involved with having bees for then 18 years. And at any one point I'd had up to 10 hives and really loved beekeeping. And then in 1988, I lost my sight. I used some over-the-counter eye drops that I didn't know had been tampered with, and they had drain cleaner in them instead of eye drops, and had a very quick life change at that moment. It was at the same time when all the Tylenol tamperings were going on, and my life had a very abrupt stop. It was sort of like being jettisoned to another planet where everything was foreign. And immediately there were a lot of things that I thought were very visually oriented that I couldn't do anymore. And, you know, things like photography, flying airplanes, driving cars. I mean, the bird beekeeping, bird watching, a lot of things that I enjoyed, I assumed that because they were visually oriented that I wouldn't be able to do them anymore. And after going through sort of a lengthy process of rehabilitation and learning how to do my life without sight, I learned that Doing things maybe not necessarily the same way I'd done them as a sighted person, but getting creative and, you know, being able to bridge those points where need vision in order to accomplish things. I have slowly over the years reclaimed a lot of things that I didn't do anymore. No, I'm not flying planes or driving cars anymore, but bird watching became bird listening and identifying birds audibly. Trying to think, you know, cooking and doing things, you know, utilizing the senses I still had left. I have creatively got back into doing things like photography and things like that. And about 4 years ago, a person that I knew wanted to keep a hive of bees on my property, and I was so excited to have bees back in my life. I thought, wow, this is ideal. She was going to maintain the hive, and I was going to get the benefit of having a hive in my yard and being around them again. And unfortunately, it didn't work out, and I realized at that point I was so disappointed that this wasn't going to happen that I went online and found out about the Sonoma County Beekeeping Association and contacted them to see if they'd be open to a blind person being part of the Beekeeping Association. And I was immediately received very positively, which is not usually the kind of experience I get. A lot of people have trepidation and worries and fears and things about people who are blind and similar beliefs about, that's a visually oriented thing, so you can't do that. But they took me into the hive, like, you know, it was immediate and very open. And Christine immediately asked to be my bee bunny, and it's just been, for me, an ideal match with all of her experience and, her ability to analyze and look at the hive and give me information that is essential to doing beekeeping. It has just been invaluable. So that kind of brings you up to date. So the total number of years I've been beekeeping now is 21, but there's a big gap in the middle.
That's good to hear. It's a long journey. I'm sure we'll talk more about the challenges as we move forward, but let's talk to Christine real quick. I actually met Christine when I was down in Sonoma giving a talk here about, what was it, last summer? Ariel, were you there also?
I wasn't. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there that day.
Okay. Anyway, so I met Christine, and Christine has been participating on the Facebook group for quite some time now. And so, Christine, why don't you give us your story? How did you get to be where you are now?
I was brought up a little bit all over Europe. We call ourselves business brats, my sister and I, because we just moved around in large cities following my dad, who was into international business. And so we had very little contact with nature, really. But somewhere around 13, 12, 15, the biology report, and for some odd reason, I chose honeybees and was fascinated by the way they communicated by dancing. So that's what I did my whole report on. And then everything sort of went dormant again until about...
Hey, Christine?
Yeah?
We're having some issues with the audio. Could you switch back to speakerphone? I can adjust for the quietness, but we're actually losing you a little bit.
Okay, hold on. Do you want me to start over again?
Yes.
Can you hear me better?
I can hear you about the same. How about you, Ariel?
Yeah, I can at least hear her now. She was completely cut out there for a while.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. As if I just asked the question, how you got to where you are.
Okay, so I grew up all over Europe in sort of large cities, and I'm somewhat of a business brat. My sisters and I and my mother followed my dad around because he was into international business and worked for very large companies. And so we moved around a lot. So we didn't have a lot of experience with nature. But around junior high sometime, we had to do a biology report. And for some odd reason, I chose the honeybee. And I was fascinated by the communication of dancing that they had, and that's what I did my report on. Then it went dormant for, oh gosh, many, many years, until about 10 years ago when I was about 43. And we had bought a property and was raising my child. I was gardening and cooking, and it sort of all came together. And a swarm came through my hive, and I watched it fly by. Actually ran in the house scared and then watched it on a branch for like 3 days, and somebody told me, beekeepers really want those, you should have called a beekeeper. So about that time, that swarm left. But it's sort of that little seed in my brain got reactivated or germinated. And I decided, well, maybe I should become a beekeeper. And it took me probably 4 years to convince myself that I was actually going to do it. And then I finally did and never looked back. I sort of found my passion. And I was like, where have you bees been? You know, almost like I was lost my entire life. And that just brought everything together for me. And I think they'll be part of my life for the forever. I can't imagine living without bees now. I got really involved with the Sonoma County Beekeepers was its president 1 year and been on the board for 6 years. I finally stepped down, but still really involved in organizing communities within our association. And then I also do mentoring. And when Ariel came along, it was sort of refreshing in a way because her interest was so genuine and I had already been doing a lot of mentoring. And so she sort of fell right into it. And besides, she lives 2 minutes from me. So that was really easy to ask her to be my bee buddy. Bee buddies are we're trying to pair people up with other beekeepers so they can beekeep together and help each other, even if they're on the same level or then. So it's not quite like a mentorship. It can be, but we want people to actually have support and have somebody to help lift the supers or somebody hold the smoker or somebody take pictures or talk about what you're seeing, so you're sort of learning together. And I was fortunate that Ariel already had beekeeping experience, so we didn't have to deal with the fear factor behind, start first getting used to the sound and used to not being afraid of being stung. Ariel was able to go right in the hive with me. And actually now does most of her own manipulation. The only time that I'm actually holding the equipment is when I need to look down inside a cell to see something more particular and describe it, what I'm seeing to her. But other than that, Ariel's able to do pretty much everything, on her own, which I feel is quite extraordinary and is a testament to her about who she is and about not giving up. Even when such a tragedy happens.
I, like I said, visited the Sonoma Beekeeping Club this last year. And I just want to say, of all the clubs that I've visited several dozen at this point. I would say that the Sonoma Club is probably the most integrated in terms of supporting new beekeepers and matching new beekeepers with experienced beekeepers. So I think I told you that when I was down there, but I just wanted to say that again.
Yeah. It's we've worked really hard because I think like a lot of other associations, we grew so fast that we couldn't keep up with the demands. Too many people wanted mentors because that's what all the books say. And when you're growing at 100 people a year, we grew up to 540 at our highest membership, and there just wasn't enough mentors, and so we needed to come with alternatives to providing mentorship. And so we're doing a lot more group mentoring. We create these cluster groups by region that meet outside the general meeting, and we try to put education through those groups and matching people and helping each other.
Yeah, it's outstanding. I don't think I have seen anything like it anywhere else that I've visited. So let's just for the beekeepers around the world, there's people all over the world that listen to this, North and South hemisphere. Why don't you give me both of you give me your impressions on the climate and the conditions there in your area to kind of get other people to understand what are your challenges as far as weather wise, and also I guess wildfires also as part of your situation.
Why don't you go ahead, Christine?
Yeah, we've had quite a bit. We've had a difficult year, 2018. We have a little bit higher losses than we're used to. We started the season with quite a sort of inclement weather, where it was spring, winter kind of weather, and the bees ejected their drones 2-3 times in the spring, which is not something we used to see. You know, we used to see that in the fall and rarely in the spring. So the bees were under stress with the weather patterns and the nectar flow. Then we had a pretty, because we had longer rains last year, so we had a really good flow eventually, and that went into a very severe dearth and a very long one where we didn't have any moisture from June through middle of October. And in by September, robbing was just incredibly high. Everybody was covering their hives with wet sheets. And, you know, the talk amongst beekeepers is all these different ways to stop robbing. And then we had one rain in October. Everything turned green. We had a small little nectar flow, and then it shot off again. We went into a second dearth right when the bees were supposedly needing to bring their last stores in. And then the wildflower, the second set of wildflowers, second year in a row, arrived. And we had 2 weeks of the worst air in the world. And I think that that was just an additional stressor that some colonies just couldn't take, sort of like the straw that broke the camel's back in a way. So the conditions last year were just very difficult. We had a hard time keeping queen right colonies. Mating was problematic. And so we worked really hard to have the colonies that we have. But we do have some that survive all this, which is actually amazing. And those are really, this year, we feel those are real gems, you know, and the swarms and the splits from those colonies hopefully going to be really strong and know what to do with the climate here and the changing climate that we're having, which is just more and more erratic, it seems.
Well, since Christine and I live like less than an eighth of a mile from each other, the weather and everything is the same for my house.
So how much rain do you have typically throughout the summer?
None.
None? Okay. That's pretty similar to here.
Pretty much none, yeah. Yeah, it would be very rare that we'd have a little shower.
And sometimes when we get to around September, there'll be a random rainfall that's real brief, but it's usually dry until, end of October?
Yeah. Yeah, and we've been drier in the fall than, you know, than when I first started beekeeping, even 10 years ago.
What about wildfires?
So, we had one really close by, a lot in 2017, and we had really, you know, really bad air and smoke in the. Fortunately, where we live, we got spared, but you know, we were all on alert as well. Ready to pack up if we needed to, because we didn't know which way the fires were going. And, they were, you know, the winds can shift so fast, that, you could feel safe 1 minute and not the next. So the wildfires, like I said, I think if you're in the middle of it, your hives may have burnt down, which some of our beekeepers lost their hives. But we also had beekeepers where the fire went right through their apiary and their bees survived, which was absolutely extraordinary. I was able to go assess the hives that survived and to see that the fire had licked the hives. Some of the supers were charred, and but inside the bees were fine. They didn't melt the comb. the bees were able to huddle, and I don't know how they did it, if they were able to hold their breath and get through the heat, really boggled my mind. But it also showed the resilience of honeybees if they're healthy and their home is sound, and if the fire was able to brush through quickly, they're able to survive. So it's we lost some, but we also had those extraordinary survivor stories of bees. And for that, hopefully we're done. You know, 2 years in a row we've had wildfires, and this last year they were further away, but the smoke was worse for some reason. So it's just the way it worked with the winds and what was going on. But hopefully we're done. We're done with that. It's very stressful to go through it, and everybody worries about their bees during that time because they're supposed to be foraging. You know, it's right before winter, and they're not. And we were walking around with masks on, so you can imagine, you know, what the bees can't put masks on their little faces to breathe through. So they have to deal with all the debris and the bad air.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's encouraging to hear that some hives made it through. That's interesting. Well, let's dive into I don't know what to call it, the experience of the blind beekeeper, because I'm very interested to learn about how you do what you do. And to be honest, I've only watched a few videos in researching blind beekeepers. So I guess let's start with, I did a video this last year about doing a hive inspection from outside the hive, which involved a lot of listening and some smelling. And so for your, how you keep bees, why don't you walk us through like how you might sense what's going on in a hive?
Okay. Well, I definitely utilize the four senses I have left. Like you mentioned, listening and smell are very important, but touch is super important. And one of the first things I thought of when I wanted to, you know, get back involved and have bees again was what I was going to wear. With my first question was gloves, no gloves. And it was an obvious decision to me that I needed to go no gloves. I needed to be able to feel and not, quote, be blind with gloves over my fingers, because that's how I see my world. It's definitely tactile. And so, yeah, that was my first choice before I even got started, which was a wear veil, but I'm not going to wear gloves, which meant, you know, I'm going to need to go slow and, you know, make sure that I'm not squishing bees. And so that was sort of my starting point. And of course, you know, after lifting off, the top of my hive and the feeder box, then I usually take my hand and just put my hand over the top of the hive, and I can feel by the heat rising, where the brood nest is, because the temperature variation. And of course I can hear the sound of the bees and, you know, kind of know what state of calmness or agitation they may be in, and or that may change as we're working with the bees. And, you know, it definitely gives me a lot of information, just the sound that I'm hearing of the hive itself. And, you know, then we get to visual information. Well, Christine also usually give me some visual orientation and, you know, talk about our plan of action and how we're going to approach the hive and why we're going into it and do all that before we even go in. And, you know, so we have a game plan and we have all the equipment and everything we need ready. so that, you know, it's within my reach and I know where everything is and my smoker is going, you know, in case I were to get stung, which I have. And that was one of the first lessons I learned was, keep your fingers together, because if you don't, you have the potential of squishing a bee between your fingers as you're lifting out a frame, which I did once and learned very quickly that, you know, unfortunately I, you know, had killed a bee, and that, you know, that then, you know, so that was my new technique, keep the fingers together. So a lot of it, things I've learned have just been, you know, my own, you know, from experience and learning along the way, learned a lot from Christine. So yeah, as we're going through, it's a lot of, she'll give me visual information. We'll keep on our plan of action. I can feel a lot of information when I'm pulling out frames as to by their weight and where the weight's distributed. You know, like one hand may feel like it's heavier than the other. And trying to think of there are other, you know, things that are unique to what I am doing. Can't think of any right now, but.
Well, let's talk about, sounds. Like, tell me, can you describe what certain sounds tell you what things?
Some sounds, I mean, like, you can hear where the bees are, or if they're further down in the hive, by the sound, where it's coming from, and that it's a little bit more distant rather than, you know, being up at the top of the hive, say. And I've been very fascinated by sound, and so I started taking one of those lavalier microphones and connecting it to my iPhone and recording the sound, but, you know, putting the microphone on top of the observation board and making recordings. And that has given me taught me more about the variations of sounds in the hive, you know, depending on the time of year, depending on what's going on, whether it's, you know, there's, you know, in the fall when there's other bees and yellow jackets trying to rob the hive, you know, the sound of the hive changes. And in the summer, you know, you can even hear the bees doing, the waggle dance and giving other bees information about where the sources are located. And it took me a while to understand what I was listening to, and I'm still learning. It's a huge learning curve. But as time goes on, I feel like I'm building on, you know, the information that I'm getting audibly. And that's also been able to allow me to, like, check on my hives during the winter when you really can't go into your hives. It gives me more information. Like, yep, they're in there and they're active, even though they're not flying out of the hives.
And you talked about feeling where the brood nest is. How do you, like, what information can you gather by feeling the heat, feeling humidity, weight? Like, talk to us about that some more. Because I think, just to give you some context, I try to teach beekeeping as like a full sensory experience rather than just looking. And so I find it difficult to describe, you know, what a sound sounds like. You know, when I go into a hive, it's kind of, a lot of it is intuitive. I've had so much practice with it that I can sense when things are wrong without knowing how to describe that sense. And I was wondering if you were able to describe those senses better than I can.
I don't know if I can describe them any better. Like when I was telling you, you know, by using the feel of, you know, the heat and knowing where the brood nest is, I mean, that's beneficial because you kind of know where to expect it when you're taking the follower boards out and, you know, like which side to approach from, you know. So it's helpful that way. And then with sound, it's like as we're working with the hive, and maybe we've been in there a while and have done quite a bit with it to manage the space, you know, to the point where, okay, they've had enough. They're getting agitated. You can hear the volume of sound go up, and the frequency is higher. So it's sort of an alert sound for me that, yeah, I think maybe we ought to start thinking about, you know, putting things back together and getting done. But yeah, you know, I'm listening to the quality of the sound and the frequency of the sound and the intensity are the sort of the things that I'm listening for. And I'm sure maybe even Christine has, you know, input on things that she hears as well.
One thing I have to say that I've learned just as much from Ariel than she says she's learned from me. It's taught me to really slow down and use my other senses, which has become so beneficial to my own beekeeping, to pay attention to sound more than just, you know, okay, they're happy or they're not happy right now. But what else do you hear? You know, you can hear piping. You can hear if there's ants in the hive, you know, you hear this zip, 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 where they're, you know, they're trying to shoo away ants. There's all these little sounds that can be extremely helpful to tell you what's going on in the hive. And Ariel has made me stop and listen more, and I think my beekeeping has improved. The same for the touch and feeling. I've been gloveless for a long time, and I've had bees crawl on my fingers and you know, tickle my fingers, and I'm less likely to squish bees if you don't have these cumbersome gloves on. But what else can you feel besides that? And heat, I never thought about putting my hand on top of the frames and feel heat. It's amazing. Or even your face. You can put your face, you know, close to and feel the heat rising from the nest. It also makes you realize maybe we should not stay in here too long if the weather's a bit cool, because you're losing all that heat. So, and then touching, you know, sometimes I just take Ariel's hand and I show her the contour of a new comb being built, you know, and how they're building. Sometimes they're building at the center of a hive, sometimes they're building in front and the back, and then they join the comb in the center. We've been able to feel drone brood, which is more poofy, and worker brood, seal brood, which is more flat. So that gives her a sense what is in the hive, and you do it very, very gently. We try not to touch queen cells when you run into them, so I just described those because you're not really technically supposed to touch queen cells. They're so fragile. But I think she can, Ariel is able to get a good sense about what's going on by using all the other senses. And it teaches us sighted people that we also can learn, so much more if we pay attention to our senses. We rely so much on our sight. And if you sometimes just take a moment to close your eyes when you're in a hive and you just listen and try to, you know, to see what else you can hear, but beside the just normal little hum of the hive when you open it, I think everybody can benefit from expanding the use of their senses.
Yeah, as I'm listening to this, I'm just like you were saying, I was struck by feeling where the brood nest is. Now that you say it, it makes so much sense. But I can remember so many times when I've gotten into a hive to inspect it and like start just going through the frames looking for where the main part of the brood nest is, and it just now it makes so much more sense to stop and, you know, feel where the heat's coming from. That's I never thought of that before.
Yeah, it's really neat, and just sometimes even when Ariel is holding a frame, how she can tell that there is sealed honey in the front of the frame and none in the back because there's a weight difference, you know, in what she feels in the left hand and the right hand, you know. And I feel that's just so amazing that she can, she tells me what I'm seeing without me saying it sometimes. And I think that is just so amazing to me. She just blows me away all the time. And I really, you know, thoroughly enjoy doing bees with her because she just is able to bring more dimensions to beekeeping, make it more wholesome for me, which then makes me a better teacher as well because I can bring all these to other students. You know, who, you know, there's other people who learn differently. And some people are more auditory and some people are more tactile. And so we can use those skills and start there, right? Rather than just doing the conventional, this is how you are a beekeeper, this is how you beekeep, this is how you go inside a hive. You can also sort of shift how you approach a hive by looking at what people's strengths are and going from there. So,
what about smell?
Well, yeah, it definitely is smell. This, you know, the smell of the wax, the honey. If something, you know, it's like there's some fermentation going on. You can smell that. You know, like when things are not right, or the smell of the hive will change. And I've noticed just that each hive does not smell exactly the same. They each have kind of their own unique odor. And different time of the year, the smells are different, which I would assume so just because of, you know, different things that they're foraging. But, yeah, the smell can give you a lot of information about the health of the hive. And Christine probably has more to add about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm much more, I used to just very cursorily use smell. You know, when you approach a hive and they're processing honey, you can have this wonderful aroma just coming out of the hive. And sometimes when you just open the hive, there's a quick, you know, just wonderful smell that comes out. But I never thought to really go further and really put my nose down and smell. You know, and try to differentiate what I'm smelling. I mean, we know, and then we also know that bees have a different scent. That's how they also can know, you know, that they belong in the hive. They belong in this hive rather than the other hive. And, why couldn't we be able to smell that? So I'm much more aware of trying to figure out. I'm still learning. My sense of smell is not quite as developed as Ariel. But, you know, I'm trying to use the smell and going, oh, this one smells much different than this one, this other one. So, using smell is, I think that's one of the senses that we've probably lost the most of, over evolution, I think. I think if we can concentrate on, using our sense of smell more, we can tell and a lot more what's going on. In a hive. Of course, if you're smelling putrid sound or, you know, vinegary sound of smell, I mean, not sound, we're talking about smell now, and just foul smell, then you start looking at what's going on. You definitely need to go into the bird nest and figure out what's going on. So a lot of people, beekeepers already know that. But there's also in healthy hives, there's all different variations of smell. When they're fermenting their bee bread, when they're processing honey, when they're what other things do you smell, Ariel? I'm sort of stumbling there.
Well, yeah, it's more, you know, like smelling for change, for things that maybe are different than what you're used to smelling every time you go into your hive. I can't, you know, pinpoint lots of specific things, but just being able to be aware of difference, you know, whether it's a different time of the year, or whether, you know, something just doesn't smell right. And that kind of tips you off that, I think we need to explore and find out what's going on.
And it's possible that, you know, once we develop this more sense of smell, that we can, you know, ascertain that something's going, is going south in a hive ahead of time. You know, often we wait too long and we realize, oh my gosh, you know, this hive is crashing. What if we could, you know, sort of, you know, by being more aware of our sense of smell, you know, could we potentially, you know, sort of, see if we could tell, if a hive needs more of our assistance or not ahead of time instead of when it's too late. I don't know. It's a good question, but it's something I'm thinking about when I'm beekeeping. And, one thing that's really come to the forefront doing beekeeping with Ariel is like, yeah, sense of smell matters and it can tell us things. And we need to almost relearn that, you know, because we so much are reliant on our sight. So, you know, it's to balance our, you know, coming to a point where we balance our senses more. As sighted people, you know, I think it's good to think about. I think we take it for granted that we can see and that we, you know, we cannot rely on the other senses because of our sight. But I think we're missing out a lot if we don't, explore the other senses.
I can think of about three pretty standard situations that I use smell for. Number one, like you were saying, there's a right smell of a hive. You open it up and it just smells like everything's going right. To me, that's sort of I get that as like a musty sweet smell. And then the other one that I encounter fairly regularly is, like you said, when a hive is getting upset, when it's time, you know, when you've been in there too long and it's time to close the hive. And that's the alarm pheromone smell, which I describe as banana Laffy Taffy. I had a friend when I lived back in Arkansas who often wore a perfume that smelled very much like that. And so I would walk past her or something and get that smell. And it just, you know, it almost triggered like an alarm response in myself, being so accustomed to having that smell. And, you know, when you get a good whiff of that smell when you're in a beehive, you know bad things are in the process of happening. And then the third one that I remember is when I was in Arkansas also, we had very humid there. And so if you had a hive, like a small hive, when I had five frame nukes, they just had a single 2-inch round entrance, and there were times when they weren't getting enough ventilation or they weren't able to dry the honey out well enough, and the nectar would start to ferment, and you could smell that even from the outside of the hive. And when you got inside the hive, you could look in the nectar cells and see little bubbles forming in the nectar as it was beginning to ferment.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I forgot about the alarm pheromone, which we're all so familiar with. If, you know, if you know, being a beekeeper, for many years now, I definitely can recognize that smell, and it's time to close up the hive and, you know, either come back another day or maybe it's just time to be done and close it up until the next inspection. But I think a lot of newer beekeepers, they don't know how to identify those smells. And so, it's nice to have that, you know, other person there, a bee buddy or a mentor, or, even talking to other beekeepers. You know, what do you smell in the hive? What is a smell that smells like, you know, what if I smell alcohol fermenty smell? What does that mean? What if I smell that banana Laffy Taffy smell? What does that mean? Right? I think it's really, I think it's something we need to incorporate in our talking about bees. You know, is the other senses, is the smell and sight, sounds and touch, that we can, you know, experience in a hive.
It kind of parallels bees themselves. You know, they're not just visual beings. They do a lot with smell and tactile and taste and hearing. So, it kind of, you know, make makes sense that that we can use our receptors, you know, in a similar way to experience them.
Yeah, and I think we often forget that, because when we open the hive, we have light, but the bees aren't doing all this in darkness, right? They're so essentially blind in the hive, right? And they have to they have to rely on their other senses, their touch and feeling of their antennas and vibration and heat and all those things we've been talking about. So in a sense, they are teaching us, you know, that there's value to the other senses. And if you take the time, you can sort of know what's going on as a whole in the hive. So like I said before, it's a more holistic way of experiencing a hive. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, as far as senses go, if you kind of compare us to other animals, you know, based on relative body size, of course, you know, our ears are, say, smaller than bats or smaller than elephants. Our noses are smaller than dogs. Our eyes are larger than, you know, rodents, most rodents, but our eyes are smaller than owls by far. And so it's kind of interesting to, you know, we also have, you know, relatively large hands compared to other animals. We use our hands as much more of a sensory input than, say, a dog uses its paws. So it's just kind of interesting to think about how we use our senses and how balanced they are compared to, just any other random animal.
Yeah, that's an interesting comparison. and that's true. I think as we've evolved, we've used less and less of our other senses. But I'm also looking at it, what are we missing? You know, if we rely too much on our sight. And that's something definitely that Ariel's taught me, you know, is like, oh my gosh, yeah, I do have a smeller and a toucher, and a right? That I can use in a beneficial way. And like I said before, and those, you know, those are things I can use to teach other people, who may have, you know, maybe other challenges or are different types of learners or, you know, even, with getting away from fear. So maybe we listen to the hive before we go in the hive and get comfortable and take some time there and get, you know, get past the fear or, you know, things like that. So, yeah, it's actually amazing how many new beekeepers are afraid of bees, and they really want to be beekeepers, but their anxiety level goes way up, and they can't calm down. So maybe we just spend some time listening to the bees at the entrance or around the hive, right? Rather than just diving in right away and then build some sense of comfort. I don't know. I just think it's for me, having been able to meet Ariel and beekeeping with her has taught me, so much more than I ever thought I would about beekeeping, on a completely different level. And I'm very appreciative of our relationship and our friendship, which, you know, will continue through the years. I'm really looking forward to this new season. We're going to start again. So we're having a little bit of a longer winter than we're used to. So we're all a little bit antsy to get in our bees again.
Yeah, I'm looking out at the window at snow on the mountains right now, which is not out of the ordinary, but not normal.
So are we, and for us, it's out of the ordinary. We've had snow in the mountains here. We've had hail. We've had flooding. We've had everything this year, and freezing weather. And you know, in the past, we've had 80 degree weather this time of year. So we're definitely, the bees are hunkered down a lot longer, and we run every time the sun comes out for a minute. We run out to make sure our hives are alive and still flying, because as soon as it warms up, they're out. They they're expanding their brood nest right now, and they're needing that fresh pollen coming in so they can make really good bee bread for their new brood. So, yeah, we're ready. Well, the other thing I wanted to bring up is that that we use very minimal smoke when we go into the hive. Actually, we barely smoke the hive. We smoke ourselves before we go in the hive. That also is very less disruptive about what's going on in the bees. So the bees tend to just go on with what they're doing in the hive. I think that's been really helpful too, to not disrupt, in a way. And not everybody can do that. But Ariel's comfort with bees is so great that, and actually that's mostly what I do now, is that I don't smoke the bees. I just smoke myself, because we sort of smell like predators and we sweat, and especially when it's really hot. So we sort of smoke ourselves ahead of time. And then we rarely use the smoker when we're in the hive, or only when we get stung. We scrape the stinger out and we smoke the area of the sting, and then we move on. And in that way too, it's much easier for me to describe what's going on realistically in the hive. They're not being disrupted completely. Of course they're disrupted because we're open the hive, but, smoke really disrupts that. Everybody starts scurrying around. The queen starts scurrying around. It's a very different feel to work a hive that's been smoked in a hive that hasn't been smoked. And mostly they stay pretty rather calm, which is amazing. We do have those hives that are a little bit testier, from time to time. But, in general, I think they appreciate not having too much, smoke in their hive. So, and it gives more of a sense of daily routine, rather than, oh my gosh, there's smoke around, we gotta clear the air, we gotta start fanning. It changes the sound of the hive, it changes what they're doing, and then I'm not really able to give Ariel a real realistic view of what's going on in there. They're in panic mode, in a sense. So I just wanted to point that one thing out, and something that maybe people can think about eventually as they get more comfortable with their bees is, the use of smoke and how we use smoke around the hive. Anything else you want to add, Ariel, on that? Because I'm sure that was very different from when you were beekeeping, before in your early years.
Yeah, I had to be really open-minded because there was that 18-year gap, and it was definitely different. Beekeeping was very different for me when I was sighted, and the equipment and queen excluder, things like that, which is, information that I had read in books and, gotten from talking to other beekeepers, which were very few and far between at that point. And so I felt like when I got back into beekeeping now, I had a big learning curve, and fortunately, I had Christine and SCBA to help with that, and reading a lot of books, kind of get me up to speed. We didn't deal with raw mite or, queen longevity was good, things like that were, just not an issue then.
I have a question. For me, getting stung is always a little jarring. I'm sure it's jarring for everybody, but for me, it almost comes like a surprise. So I was wondering if you're focusing more on your sense of touch, does getting stung, is that extra jarring for you, or tell me about that?
It's jarring. I don't know if it's extra jarring. It's usually, I know it's because of something I've done wrong, that caused it. I don't know if it affects me any more than it did before. And I don't know if I get it stung any more than Christine does when we go into the hives. But, I think for me, it's startling when it happens. I know it's going to hurt like crazy for a few minutes, and then that pain will be over. And I think, having had a long period of time of being a beekeeper before. It's like, yeah, it wasn't the first time I've been stung. It just, you know, yeah, it's a surprise when it happens, but I'm sort of surprised, you know, because you can't always see it coming anyway. I'm sure you're not visually prepared for it when it happens. So it's, you know, pretty much the same for me.
Well, coming to the end of our hour here, is there anything that you think that I've missed or I should have asked that I didn't?
I can't really think of anything except that, you know, I think that people, like I was saying originally, that people have preconceived ideas of what blind people can and cannot do. And it comes a lot from the fact that we're a small population. So, you know, most people haven't had direct experience around somebody who's blind. But blind people pretty much can do things that sighted people can do. It's just sometimes the approach has to be a little different to come to the same conclusion. And, you know, I just... so appreciative of Christine and the Sonoma County Beekeeping Association for being open to that and, you know, sort of letting me tell them also what I'm able to do instead of, you know, having that preconceived idea of what blind people can and cannot do. And, you know, I consider myself a beekeeper, even though there's a piece of beekeeping I'm not able to do myself, which is the visual part of it. You know, the reality is in life, we all depend on other people for things, you know, like you go to doctors, you go to lawyers, you know, you have other people help with taxes. So it's a different way to come to the same conclusion of being a beekeeper. So, I wouldn't eliminate the idea of, gee, if I can't do the whole thing from start to finish 100% myself, then that disqualifies me. But yeah, just being open to people who may have interest in being beekeepers, but may not be able to approach it the same traditional way, you know, that it's been done or being done.
I think I would say working near or with a blind beekeeper is kind of the same has the same benefits of diversity in all aspects of life. Working with different types of people or knowing different types of people, talking to different types of people. Like you've pointed out a number of things that even in this conversation that I never would have thought of from my perspective. And so I think it's a great message to beekeepers and also to all people that, finding diversity of opinion, diversity of experience and welcoming those things into your own experience will enrichen your life probably more than you could imagine at the outset, at least.
Absolutely. And, you know, and also, you know, I have to add, Ariel is a wonderful, nice, loving person. And she's so excited and wants to learn and wants to be part of it. It's very contagious if you want to be around Ariel. So that helps tremendously too, is the outlook on life. And, you know, I often think, oh, wow, you know, look at that. You know, this is making me excited. And you know, even those days sometimes when you're maybe not having such a good day, to have such a positive, person in your life is really wonderful. So I want to thank Ariel for bringing that into my life and I'm very thankful and, very humbled by her. And I want to thank her for making me a better beekeeper.
Wow, it means a lot, those words that you say. Very touching. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you both for taking time out of your, I'm sure, busy day to talk to me and to educate other people on beekeeping in general, certainly, but also beekeeping from blind perspective. Thank you both for your experience and for sharing.
Thank you for having
Thanks for inviting us.
This has been the Treatment Free Beekeeping Podcast. Thanks for joining me. If you heard something that was interesting or useful to you, think about becoming a patron, starting at $1 a month or whatever you think is appropriate. So far, I've managed to keep the podcast totally free of advertisements, and I'd like to keep it that way. Your support allows me to continue producing the podcast without having sponsorships and without having to read out advertisements like you hear on way better shows like Serial or American Scandal or Dr. Death. Just some podcasts I like to listen to. So you can become a patron at patreon.com/TFB. By supporting the show, you'll get access to the TFB Pub on Facebook. It's a closed group for supporters of this podcast and the other stuff that I do, and it gives you access to things like live streams when I record podcasts sometimes. And lately, I've been offering podcast episodes several days before everyone else gets to hear them, so that's fun also. If you'd like to host me at your club or event, I'm available to speak at very reasonable rates. Check out the speaking page of my website, parkerbees.com, for details. This show is hosted, produced, and edited by me. My name is Solomon. My executive producer is Adam Blitz. Then this show is brought to you by him and all the other patrons. Check out the Treatment Free Beekeepers Facebook group at facebook.com/treatmentfreebeekeepers, and watch out for fakes because they do exist now. You can find my Treatment Free Beekeeping videos at youtube.com/treatmentfreebeekeeping. The catalog is now over 110 videos with some great stuff by some of your favorite speakers and probably some you don't care for. So that's life. We have a new forum at tfbforum.com. Thanks for joining me. Please share and rate this podcast whenever you get a chance, and have fun keeping bees, because if you're not having fun, change your definition of fun.